Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sake Revolution. This is America's first sake podcast. I'm your host, John Puma from the Sake Notes, administrator over at the Internet Sake Discord, and the guy on the show who, in case you haven't heard, is not a sake samurai.
And I am your host, Timothy Sullivan. I am a sake samurai. I'm also a sake educator, and I'm also the founder of the Urban Sake website. And every week, John and I will be here tasting and chatting about all things sake and doing our best to make it fun and easy to understand.
Wonderful, wonderful. Tim, I think we are a little bit overdue. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're overdue for a visit to the Sake Education Corner. Do you have any topics that we might be able to chit-chat about?
So I've got a great idea for what we can talk about today. Let's go full bore, full strength, and talk about one of my favorite styles of sake, Ginshu.
Ooh. So I know, when you say full bore, full strength, you mean
full strength.
Cask strength.
You know what Ginshu is, right?
I do.
So what's our everyday definition of Ginshu?
Ginshu is non-diluted sake. When I am describing Ginshu to people, sometimes I say things like cask strength.
Okay, that's a term borrowed from the world of whiskey and spirits,
yes,
right?
Yes, right.
And what does that mean in the world of whiskey and spirits?
Well, in the world of whiskey, it means that it is higher in alcohol because it's not diluted by water.
That's right. So in that sense, you can use this term cask strength to define Ginshu in a way, but it's a little bit misleading because we don't use casks, wooden casks, to age our sake. So I find it's a okay way to explain it as in layman's terms, but I tend to avoid the term cask strength, barrel strength. Some people also say barrel proof.
And barrel proof. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, I like that. That sounds like a very expensive bourbon.
But when it comes to sake, they're a little bit misleading. So the way I define Ginshu generally is no water added or undiluted with water. That's usually what I say, undiluted with water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but let's look at the word Ginshu a little bit more closely. So shu, we know what that means, right?
Shu. Right, that is a drink.
It means sake.
Sake, yeah.
So there's a few ways to say sake in Japanese. One of them is shu, S-H-U. You can say junmai shu. You can say Ginshu. There's a whole bunch of shoes. Imelda Marcos.
I've heard Ginjo shu.
Ginjo shu, exactly. Mm-hmm. So this suffix shu means sake. And gen is the first part of that. So the kanji or the Japanese writing for gen, that means source or origin or sometimes beginning. So
origin.
Origin. Okay. So it's like, you can think of it almost like the beginning point of what sake will be. So it's the origin or source, and that is the meaning behind the kanji. So it's kind of like the origin sake is a way of one way of translating Ginshu. But again, the meaning is no water added. And of course, John, what is the fallout of no water added? What kind of sake does that give us?
Well, often it means that it's boozier. Yes. Not always, but often.
Yeah. Higher strength sake. Now,
yep.
Do you know that there are limits, legal limits on what sake can be?
I have heard that there is a maximum, and I have heard that that maximum is, correct me if I'm wrong, 22%?
That is correct.
Ah.
So 22% is the highest level by law in Japan that a sake can be, highest alcohol level you can have. Mm. And do you know what the lowest number is?
I don't actually. What is the lowest number?
It's 1%.
No, really?
Yep. So if you brew a sake, it cannot be lower than 1%. So 1% to 22%. That's the legal range for sake alcohol percentage in Japan.
That is an extraordinarily generous range that I want to say. I'm still wrapping my head around the 1%. I don't think I've ever had any 1% sake. Tim, have you ever had any 1% sake?
No, I never have.
Oh.
I've never seen one. I don't know if they're out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of demand for 1% sake. But this would be like the old duels of sake, though. It's like, you know, you can drink it and then drive or something.
Well, we're here to talk about the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So let's talk about when water is added to sake during the production process. So when you finish brewing your tank of sake, you press it and you separate the alcohol from the unfermented rice. And then you mm-hmm. have freshly pressed sake.
Right.
And that sake can be many different alcohol percentages, but usually it's a little bit higher. The average, I would say, when it comes out of the press is like 17-18%. Mm-hmm. So that's high for the average product you could buy in the store when it comes to sake, right?
Typically, yeah.
Yeah. So the reason that they brew at a higher level is because when you store sake for 6 months before bottling, it's safer to have the alcohol percentage be higher. There's less chance of spoilage of the sake because you've got more alcohol in there. And that's going to kill off any, you know, wild bacteria or wild yeast that might get in there.
Sure.
And when it comes to bottling, after, let's say, 6 months of aging, what they would do is they would add water right before or at the time of bottling and bring that alcohol level down. Generally, the average is about 15%. And that's something we see a lot of, right? About 15, 16%.
Do we know why they landed at that number specifically?
The explanations I've heard from people is that that's the alcohol percentage that the customers demanded. Like, that's what the market wants.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So the people have spoken and they want 15 to 16% alcohol most of the time.
That's right.
That's very interesting because I feel like sake's alcohol is a tiny bit higher mm-hmm. than the closest beverage that's really comparable to it. That's wine. And wine, yeah. I have seen wines that are 15, 16, but I want to say that wine is more of a 13 or so as like a rule of thumb, 11 to 13.
Yep. 11, 12% is pretty average for wine. And sake, the average is definitely 15.5%. The majority of sakes in the market are in that range. So when you skip this step of adding water to the sake at the time of bottling, generally you have what's called a genshu. Again, that's the no water added sake. But they couldn't leave well enough alone. And did you know there is an exception to this rule? You can add water to sake and still call it a genshu.
Wait a minute, Tim. You just told me that means that it's no longer against you.
There's an exception. One All exception.
Right. I'm ready. What is the exception? When is against you, not against you?
Against you is not against you when you add 1% or less of water by volume. So if you add a little bit of water, that adds up to less than 1% of the total of the batch. You can add a little bit of water up to 1%. And you can still call it against you by law.
What kind of impact is 1% water going to have on your alcohol level in a sake?
Well, it can adjust it by about 1%. So if you're coming in at 16.5 and you want to maybe bring it down to 15.5, you can add a small amount of water, again, about 1% total. And still legally sell that as a genshu if you want. So there is this little loophole if you want to add a small amount of water. But otherwise, anything over 1% addition of water, you cannot call it a genshu anymore.
That's interesting. One whole percent is not insignificant if you're trying to bring it down.
Yeah. So you could be drinking a genshu that does have a little bit of added water, but that's just because they couldn't keep things easy and simple for us. They had to, for some reason, go in there and monkey with the rules, but
it's messed up, man.
Yeah. But it's good to know. It's good to know.
It's good to know. It is good to know.
Do you like genshu, John? Is it something you enjoy drinking?
It's not something I look for. It is something that it's just another thing on the label to me. It's not something I really chase after. It's not something that I go out of my way for, but it's also not something that turns me off when I see it. It's just a factor. And I don't think it's something that really influences flavor a lot for me.
Oh, really?
I mean, there are a few notable exceptions, one of which I'll be tasting in a little bit. But by and large, it's not something that I really think about when I'm selecting sake or I'm tasting it. What about you?
Well, Genshu is something I generally don't chase after myself. Mm-hmm. It, for me, it has a pretty big impact on the flavor generally. Those higher alcohol percentages, I feel like you can really feel them. And it's a little bit difficult, in my opinion, to bring balance and nuance to sake that has such a high alcohol percentage.
I can see that.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten into trouble with a Genshu?
I mean, I have. I've gotten in trouble with many sakes, Tim. Some of them happen to be Genshu.
I just think Genshu can hit you a little hard sometimes, especially if it's like a super smooth, high alcohol Genshu. Sometimes you can be sipping on it.
But if it's super smooth, remember that balance problem you were talking about a moment ago? That's not present. And that is a testament to the craft.
Yes.
And I think we owe it to them to drink that sake. Yeah. But I do understand what you mean. But that's also where I sit on it is I've had so many Genshu that don't taste boozy and that have just a really great balance to them. So that's why it doesn't really factor in for me that much because it can be meaningless to the flavor in a way. Of course, it can be very meaningful as well. But that's why in my head, it's another thing to look at, but it's not something I really focus on.
Yep.
But I know people who do.
Yeah.
I'm married to one. I think Genshu is a traditional factor in crazy style, if I'm not mistaken.
Genshu is one of the key components of crazy
key
style.
It's a key performance metric of crazy style.
I think it's important to recognize and say for our listeners also that there's all different levels of Genshu.
Oh, yeah.
When you brew sake, you can brew it up to the upper limit and then water it down or not. Or you can brew sake in its original state at a lower percentage. You could brew sake to 15 or 16% alcohol, add no water to it, and that can still be a Genshu, even though it doesn't reach the stratospheres or the upper levels of high alcohol. So Genshu is a term that has a pretty big range, I'd say from like 16% up to 22%.
Now I have a question, and this might be getting a little too much into the weeds, but my understanding is that the alcohol percentage is going to change during the duration of the sake's brewing.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, does that mean that the sakes that have the higher alcohol are brewed longer as a broad rule or shorter? In other words, like does the alcohol content increase over time or does it decrease over time?
Alcohol levels are going to increase over time.
Okay.
And there's a few ways that we can control how much alcohol is produced. One way is time. Mm-hmm. The other factor is temperature. Mm. So the yeast are going to produce more sake more rapidly at higher temperatures. If you freeze them out, they're going to start shivering and put on their little yeast sweaters, and they're not going to produce as much alcohol as quickly.
I want to see the little yeast sweaters now.
If you bring the temperature of the mash down dramatically, you can even stop fermentation with low temperature. So temperature control is of the utmost importance for producing small amounts of alcohol over a long time. We call this brewing low and slow. So low temperature.
And slow.
Yeah, low and slow. That produces the finest quality sake.
It's a term I usually hear associated with like Daikinjo.
Yes.
We brew this low and slow.
I thought you were going to say roasting a turkey.
I mean, also that.
Yeah, so there's a few methods that brewers have to control the finished amount of alcohol they get, but also the volume of alcohol they get over time, because you can, again, you can use the temperature and you can also use the length of fermentation.
Wonderful. I do hope that we both thought about this ahead of time and brought examples of Genshus to taste today. Because if not, this is going to be a very short show.
We're going to do a high-low Ginshu tasting today.
Excellent, excellent. And which one do you have?
I'm the low.
You're the low. So, that means I'm the high.
Yes.
And I hope I'm definitely the high.
I hope you had a hearty lunch to soak up all this Ginshu.
I think this is one of the highest, isn't it, Tim?
It is.
In fact, it's getting close to that limit we talked about earlier. Yep. That's going to be fun. Okay, Tim, why don't we start with the low?
Yeah.
What do you have?
Let's introduce our sake. So the sake that I brought is a Ginshu sake from Okayama Prefecture. Mm-hmm. This is an unpasteurized sake. It's called Kamikokuro Tokagen Tokubetsu Junmai Nama Ginshu. That's a lot. That is a big, long name.
There are a lot of descriptors in that title.
Yep. And we'll talk about all those in a little bit, but just as a brief introduction, this is a Ginshu at 16.5% alcohol. So in the world of Ginshu, in the world of undiluted sakes, this is definitely on the low end. So this is the lower alcohol style of Ginshu. And the rice milling rate is 58%. It's on the sweeter side, SMV minus 11. Mm-hmm. And the brewery name again is Kamikokuro, which means the heart of God.
That's a great name.
It is a great name. All right.
As a matter of coincidence, Tim.
Yes?
I also have a bottle of the Kamikokuro Tokegen Tokubetsu Junmai Genshu Suburotate Nama. In my hand right now.
All right. So we can taste that one together when the time comes.
Yes. Additionally, I also have a bottle of Tamagawa Red Label Heirloom Yamaha Ginshu. And this sake puts the G in Ginshu. It's a capital G Ginshu because the alcohol percentage here is 20 to 21%.
21%. Yikes.
The name of the brewery is Kinoshita Brewery, and that is in Kyoto.
Yes.
I want to say that this brand is very famous for their Ginshu, among other things.
Yeah. So they do like spontaneous fermentation, wild yeast. They're like on the cutting edge of all these hardcore brewing styles, right?
Oh, yes. Most definitely, this particular sake is that ambient yeast style.
That's amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's going to give you some funky flavors for sure.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. But I think that maybe we should start low and work our way up.
All right. So I have my bottle of the Kamikokuro, and I'm going to open it up. And let's give it a pour. Now, when I see this in the glass, it has a little bit of a, not rosé color, but just a hint of color. Almost, for me, it has a little bit of a pink tinge to it. I don't know if you see that as well.
Mine doesn't come across come across pink, but it is off-white for certain.
Yeah. Okay. So let's give this one a smell, and then we can talk about some of the characteristics of this sake. So.
This aroma.
Yeah. This is super fruity and juicy.
It's also like really unique. I don't think I've ever smelled a sake that smells exactly like this. This is very, very interesting. And yes, it is fruity, but it's a kind of a different take on it.
One of the unique characteristics of this sake in particular is that they use a yeast that is cultivated off of white peach, which is a famous fruit for Okayama Prefecture. So this uses white peach yeast, and I feel that imbues the sake with some hints of fruitiness that are really unique, and a lot of aromatics come from the type of yeast that is selected. So that's a really unique point about this sake.
It's very nice.
Yeah. It's lovely. The aroma is just beautiful. For me, it has gentle notes of melon and green grape and just super soft tropical fruits as well. Of course, a peach. And let's give it a taste. All right. So this has a wonderful sweetness to it, I think. And I'm not a huge fan of sweet sakes. This is SMV minus 11. Again, that's our measurement of sweetness or dryness generally. Mm-hmm. And minus 11 is relatively deep into the sweet territory.
Yeah, I want to say that this might be the lowest SMV we've ever had on the show. I think, I'm not sure if we've had anything lower than minus 11. Hmm.
But it doesn't read disturbingly sweet. Of course, there's sweetness there. But I find it's balanced well with this just a touch higher alcohol. So let's mm-hmm. talk about the Genshu aspect of it. Normally, as we said earlier, Genshu is 17, 18, 19%. But they bring this in naturally at 16.5%. So that tells me this is probably brewed low and slow, as we were talking about, where they don't let the alcohol get too high. They brew over a longer period of time. And it's a fresh press Nama, so they don't do any aging per se on this as well. So all those things together bring a good counterpoint to the residual sugar that's there. Really good balance, and even though there is sweetness there, it's really pleasant. It's really enjoyable, and it's a fruity type of sweetness, not cotton candy or bubble gum or anything off-putting. It's very gentle, very fruity, and just lovely. So if you like sweeter white wines, I think this would be right up your alley.
This is this is weapons grade drinkable.
Yes, this
is a sake you can really lose track of. I believe the word crushable is something you've enjoyed using.
Quaffable,
yes.
Crushable. Yeah, easy drinking, capital E, capital
dangerously
D.
So.
Yes, weapons grade, easy drinking. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is super approachable, really gentle. And even though it's sold as a Genshu, you don't get anywhere near that classic Genshu territory. So it's really soft. It has a softness to it.
Yeah, I would say that if I were the type of person who saw Genshu as a big, boozy sake, and I tasted this, I might be disappointed that it's not that.
Yes. Yeah. If you're chasing a traditional 22% Genshu, you're not going to find it here, not with this sake.
Absolutely not.
One other thing I think we need to mention is that often Genshu and Nama, or unpasteurized, go together. You very often find them together, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Especially those like early season Namas are often Nama Genshu, because it's kind of just giving you that, this is from the press into the bottle as much as we can do.
Yep, as fast as you can from the press right into the bottle. Ain't got time for that. No time for water. No time for charcoal. And you get the purest expression of sake right from the press, freshly squeezed. And that is very much what this tastes like. And that fruitiness, when, you know, having worked at a sake brewery, when you're stirring the vats right before they get pressed, mm-hmm. the aromas that waft up from these fermentation vats can be super fruity and intoxicating in more ways than one.
I was about really, to say.
Really engaging and fruity and juicy. And when you get that in the glass at home, that's something really special for me, because you get that impression of the freshly pressed sake right out of the fune, right out of the press. It's so, so engaging and so delicious.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right. Well, I think we've got a winner here. Ding, ding, ding. We both love this sake, don't we?
We do. We absolutely do love this sake. And I want to say that until recently, I had never had this sake before.
Mm.
So actually, as we're recording this, we are less than 24 hours from my having first tasted this. And it is such a tremendous surprise and so, so delicious.
All right, John. Well, we found a winner with Kami Kokoro. That is mm-hmm. our lower alcohol example of Genshu. Let's slide over to you. And we want to push the limit. Push the pedal to the metal. Let's push the pedal to the metal.
This is floored right now. The alcohol percentage is floored on this sake. Again, this is the Tamagawa Red Label Heirloom Yamahai Genshu. And Again, the alcohol percentage in this guy, 20 to 21%. So the rice variety here is Kitanishiki.
Kitanishiki.
Kitanishiki. Acidity is 2.9. Polishing ratio on that Kitanishiki is 66%. Sake meter value is plus 3.5. But I don't think I'm going to be thinking this is very dry. And the yeast is listed as a house yeast, and that is because, like, literally it's the ambient yeast in the house.
It's on the wall.
In the wall.
Yeah, it's on the wall. It's
that is the most literal way to say house yeast ever. And yeah, that's what we've got here. Now, note that was a very small pour because this is very powerful stuff. So despite this being so potent on the alcohol end of things, the aroma is not reflecting that. The aroma is a very clean, very, I want to say fresh, like a almost like a fresh cut grass kind of aroma. Mm. And I do get this on a lot of Tamagawa's sakes. But if you let it linger and you inhale a little bit more, then the alcohol starts to trickle in. You start to notice that a little bit more. Hmm. It is 20%. It can't hide forever.
When I do drink a super high alcohol sake, it tends to hit you more on the finish, right?
Yeah.
Like the back palate really like punches you in the face with that higher alcohol. Yeah. So it may be smooth and a little deceptive up front, but these higher alcohols I find really come through on the finish.
Mm-hmm. Now let's take a taste. Whoa. Okay, so the contrast here is extraordinarily stark. This is wearing its alcohol percentage on its sleeve. This tastes very strong. This is something that I would want to have on the rocks.
Oh, yeah.
The taste is so funky, but also so powerful that my brain puts this in that I want to have this in like a rocks glass or like a whiskey sniffer. It goes into that realm for me where I'm more comfortable comparing it subconsciously to scotch or something like that. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you know, a little water might open this up nicely. Mm. So they didn't dilute it, but I'm looking to dilute it apparently.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that I don't think this is good. This is fantastic. This is really well made, but I also add ice to a lot of my whiskeys. That's a completely normal thing for me.
Let's talk about that for a second. I think putting sake on the rocks, people out there might not know that's a thing you can do. So let's talk about that for a second.
For me, I first came across it from this very brewery. They produce a product called Icebreaker, and it is their summer genshu, and it's designed to be and advertised as something, a sake that you can drink on the rocks. And I don't think the alcohol percentage is nearly as high on that sake as it is on this one. And I've had that sake on the rocks. I've had that sake straight. And I do really like it on the rocks. It's a very different experience. And I want to say that I'm going to have something very similar here. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, through the magic of modern technology, I do have ice in the house. And I can make this happen. So, I'll take this ice cube and add it to my Tamagawa Red Label. I'm going to give it a little bit of a swirl. Let the ice really impact things in there.
For relaxing times, make it Tamagawa time. Now, the advantages to adding a nice big ice cube to a high alcohol genshu: one, you keep it cold, and keeping it cold keeps it crisp. And two, when the ice cube melts, you dilute it just a little bit, and you can bring it down and maybe round off a bit of harshness that you might get with a super high alcohol sake.
Right off the bat, the aroma has changed. And it's dampened a bit. Now the aroma is a little bit more of that very difficult to describe funkiness that I was tasting earlier. But now it's kind of coming at me, you know, on the nose, which is very interesting. And then when I sip on it, it is it has gone from being this really kind of intense flavor that you're thinking about a lot and you're very cognizant while you're sipping on it. Now it is light and refreshing. And that's just from adding a single ice cube. But I think that a lot of sake doesn't get along tremendously well with ice. I think it's not something you want to do with certainly not with every sake.
No way.
But I think that something like this, where you're hitting those extremes and also something that's this funky and different and interesting, having a little bit of ice in there really lightens it up and mellows it. It's a different experience. It is indestructible and it just changes and is delicious no matter what you do. So out of the bottle, this is wonderful. I put an ice cube in. It is still wonderful, just a little bit different.
Different.
Yep. If I warm this up, it's probably still going to be wonderful. But it's going to be a little bit different again.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't want to warm up the one with the ice cube, though. That would be a little weird.
You know, I wanted to ask you one thing about your sake. I was looking at the stats for both of our genshus here. Yours has an acidity of 2.9.
Yes.
Which is high. My sake had an acidity of 1.4, which is just in the mid to low standard acidity range.
Right.
So I know you're getting a higher alcohol, and you said the ice cube mellowed that out. Are you picking up on any like overt acidity in your sake as well?
I mean, there is. It's present, but it's really well balanced, even before the ice cube. Mm-hmm. The sake meter value on this is plus 3.5, whereas yours was minus 11. And so I think that, you know, even though these numbers are very wild, like my acidity number is very wild, your sake meter value number is very wild, but they're doing other things with the sake to balance them out, to rein them in the manner that each brewery knows how to do. And it's, again, a testament to just like what these guys are doing and how they understand and know what they're working with and are able to get what they want out of it. And that's amazing. Like it's one of those wonderful things about sake that is just the numbers don't always tell the whole story.
Yeah, that's such a good point. That's really smart because you can't look at one stat about any given sake. You can't chase that rice milling number. Oh, I only drank 30% milled or below. Or, you know, or SMV minus 11 is too sweet. I'm going to hate it. If you live your life that way, you're never going to find new exciting sakes. And both of the sakes we're tasting are, just like you said, such good examples of how you can play with extremes without going overboard. You still have balance. You still have yummy sake. But you can try different extremes when it comes to different parameters. It's so exciting. John, I think that we've touched on some really interesting aspects of genshu sake. One thing we can keep our eyes open for are delicious genshus in your local liquor store, wine shop. They're really worth checking out. And you don't have to be afraid of them if you're a bit wary of higher alcohol sakes. You can find genshus that are lower. And if you do have a higher alcohol genshu you find that you love, you can throw an ice cube in there and really enjoy it, right? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I'm really preferring this with the ice cube. It's wonderful. It's really, really delicious.
John, thank you so much. It was so much fun talking to you today about these fabulous genshus. And I want to thank our listeners as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really do hope that you're enjoying our show. Now, if you would like to show your support for Sake Revolution, one way you can help us out would be to take a couple of minutes and leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way for us to get the word out about our show.
After you've posted your shining review of our show at Apple Podcasts, please go and tell a friend and then go and subscribe and then tell your friend to subscribe too. And then every week when we publish a new episode, it will magically show up on your device of choice without any need for you to click any buttons or tap anything or anything like that.
The best way to get an episode.
I think
so. No tapping. And as always, if you would like to learn more about genshu sake or any of the sakes we tasted in today's episode, please be sure to visit our website, sakerevolution.com, and you can check out the detailed show notes right there on the website.
And if you have questions or comments that you would like us to talk about, we want to hear from you. Please reach out to us. Our email address here is feedback@sakerevolution.com. So until next time, please remember to keep drinking sake. and kanpai. Well, that was fun.
Time for more Genshu.